Advice that was required along with the administration of the device, but recognize that there's no way to know how well done that was.
No, I think, Neil, the question is, if you measured this with PT only, and then you add in PT or assistant device, how many new residents get counted into the numerator?
That's a good question that I don't know the answer to off the top of my head. Carol, do you know?
No, I don't.
Because if it's not significant, then there's not a lot. You don't need a, you know, there's, if PT and assistant device, if PT is highly, highly correlated with assistant device, then it doesn't add much. If they're very different, then I think some of the questions, you know, come up with here.
And my concern is that a facility, especially since physical therapy in although it can be Medicare Part B reimbursed in some facilities, depending on how their reimbursement is, it may be more of a cost to them. They may be tempted to just give an assistive device to somebody rather than provide the service, and they would get their little chit on the quality indicator.
And I think that is one point. And the other, I agree that I don't think it's a significant number or shouldn't be. And again, the reality is that a device issued without training, without proper fit, actually increases risk for falls. So even if it was a small number, it could negatively impact measuring the impact of the intervention when you consider. I don't believe the issuance of an assistive device independent of anything else is actually an intervention to address fall risk.
And that was actually to my point, which is one dimension of validity. And maybe it was in the lit review. I was wondering if anyone could mention it from either Rand, who I've found does very fine work. But one of the things that I look for in terms of a dimension of validity is, if this happens, is there any evidence that it actually improves what you're trying to improve, which is falls reduction? Was that correlation made well in either the submission or did the folks from Rand have any evidence that doing this the way you're measuring it actually reduces falls?
So this measure itself, as measured in the nursing home, we do not have any link to outcome. The same measure based on chart review within an intervention study among community-based patients is related to a decrease in fear of falling. And when combined with several other falls-based measures, because this is, of course, the treatment part of measures that include history and exam taking, together those are very much related to improvement in fear of falling, but not we have not linked it to falls or injuries.
Did you say fear of falling or
yes,
actual
we use
falls?
The Tinetti's fear of falling scale.
Sorry, I might have missed this. This is Dee Dee Orden. This uses both administrative and MDS data, and I assume that's the rationale for restricting it to the over 65, because it would seem like under 65, you know, the same issues would apply. I'm having trouble understanding how the production of that measure would happen and whether the administrative data truly are needed given data elements in 3.0. And I looked real quickly. Obviously, the G5A must be for 2.0. I don't know what 3.0 has about assistive devices, but I'm sure it has something.
Darlene Thompson, I got a couple of questions. I'm assuming since we're going 65 or older, you're taking it from the birth date from somewhere, either from the MDS, the birth date is on there, or from the administrative claim. The second part, I need you to scroll that back down. I'm sorry, on the screen. Thank you. But I'm confused about. I'm trying to figure out what this is actually measuring, because the numerator is. I lost it because he moved it. enumerated details is residents who have a new balance problem, which would be identified in the last 7 days off the ARD date, who received a new assisted device or physical therapy in the prior 4 months. So I'm trying to figure out if a resident had therapy 4 months before the ARD date, and in the ARD, and on this new assessment, I say they had an increase in their balance problem. I'm trying to figure out what we're trying to measure here, because the therapy was 4 months before we identified they had a new balance problem. So the
denominator is a comparison between two quarterly reports. Therefore, it's possible that the decrement in either balance or gait could have occurred any time during that interval. Therefore, a physical therapy that occurred, let's say, for instance, that the balance change occurred 2.5 months ago, 2 weeks after the prior MDS report. Therefore, physical therapy initiated at that time would be 2.5 months prior to the current MDS, but would have indeed been the appropriate clinical maneuver.
And I think a bit of the struggle is the 4 month, and what they do is they give a 30-day window prior to the previous MDS.
Right, and the reason for that is that in our experience, balance problems don't occur all of a sudden, and if physical therapy is being initiated, the thought is that they are identifying an abnormality, and therefore they are interacting clinically to attempt to ameliorate it. The thinking is that we are attempting to include all reasonable clinical interventions for a worsening gait or balance problem.
So let me throw something into the pit here for discussion. I would put forth to the group, given the dialogue, that we vote on a time-limited approval that asks for a crosswalk to the MDS 3.0 that comes back with a little bit of the data literature that Neil said they'd look at both ends, whether severe dementia was excluded or if any data would suggest severe dementia actually is helpful in this group, and some data on whether the assistant devices, how much it actually adds to the measure, and whether you need to actually split it or not, with some recommendation back to the group, but a time-limited approval based on that. That would sort of summarize the comments. I'm seeing a lot of people want to discuss that at all. Yeah, Bill?
Just a comment. I mean, somewhat my reaction is, are the qualifiers so substantive as to make it problematic? Hard to support.
And I would just, to that point, say that I think it would be difficult to support with the alternative of therapy or an assistive device as being treated as equal interventions.
I've got one other question. Is there an exclusion for if a resident refuses therapy?
The criteria was they actually receive therapy through CPT code.
Right, so if they refuse therapy, they wouldn't be counted. So
that's
then
correct.
That measure would show that you potentially, because I'm assuming this would be as the higher the number, the better, supposedly, the measure is.
Right.
So you could have a low measure because you have a lot of residents that are refusing to pay for therapy.
Now, what I don't know is number of days, duration of therapy intervention. There's nothing to indicate that. It's basically if therapy is billed, they qualify as having received therapy.
Correct.
So let me based on those comments, let me modify the time-limited approval. Time-limited approval as PT only, with them coming back with data as to really justifying why assistant devices needs to be added in. And then the stuff we talked about before, the MDS 3.0 crosswalk and the information on exclusions of dementia to see whether they need to modify that. Is that a reasonable approach, or you guys still don't feel comfortable with it?
Are we modifying the measure?
We're suggesting a modifying of the assistant, dropping the assistant device with them to come back with data to see whether they should include it or not. Because it's what I'm hearing from them is they don't, their concerns with leaving assistant devices is, and if it doesn't add much to the measure, you would drop it anyway. But if it adds a lot, then they have to figure out how to justify to us why they'd want to put it in with better validity, reliability, but that the PT alone would be sufficient with all the data that was suggested and presented to us. That's the way I'm summarizing it. But I could be summarizing it wrong. I'm seeing head nods, so.
Yeah, I think that sounds reasonable. I mean, for the most part, the standard of care for a new balance problem is to have a physical therapy assessment. So my gut feeling is that a physical therapy assessment alone should be adequate, but I didn't do the research, and I would trust that the technical expert panel did. But perhaps they just don't have that data on hand. So I would agree. I think otherwise it's a fairly sound measure.
All right. All in favor of time-limited approval with PT excluding assistant device, ask the developers to come back with information about assistive device, see the literature review on exclusion for dementia, but right now it excludes severe dementia, and that the crosswalk with MDS 3.0. All in favor? All opposed? Three opposed. Any abstaining? One abstaining. Can I just ask, or do I need to? Can I? No, never mind.
Yeah, you can ask what?
Well, no. You can abstain for any reason. You don't have to give a reason.
Well, I'd like to. And okay. I just would like. I think we've said this a few times, but more time to review this would be helpful. And I hope I'm sure that's clear, but. That's why I'm upset.
And the three dissenting votes, the dissenting opinion.
I would like to see evidence that the process actually links to the desired outcome, which is fewer falls, not fear of falls.
Bill,
same point.
Darlene. And exclusion for refusals is why you okay. Neil, you got all that? And Carol, you got all those feedback?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Next measure, 021, RTI.
Hi, this is the last time I'll be at the table this afternoon. Yes, I'm the last measure. Okay. The last measure that we'll be discussing is physical restraints. And the purpose of the proposed measure is to report on the percent of long-stay residents who were physically restrained daily during the 7 days prior to the resident assessment. And again, I'll sort of summarize and highlight just the pertinent importance points. Physical restraints may be used in nursing homes to control people whose behaviors are judged to be disruptive, aggressive, or dangerous, including patients with cognitive impairment. It also poses serious risk for nursing home residents, including pressure sores, decreased mobility, depression, agitation, and social isolation. Also, residents who experience greater use restraints also experience an increased risk in hospitalization. Restraints reduce the residents' autonomy and their dignity, and according to the OBRA Act of 1987, it specifically grants residents the right to freedom from undue physical restraints. The associated guideline from CMS states the resident has the right to be free from any physical or chemical restraints imposed for the purpose of discipline or convenience and are not required by the resident's medical symptoms. Concerns in regards to restraint use have been voiced by various organizations, such as the National Citizens Coalition for Nursing Home Reform, the Alzheimer's Association, the American Physical Therapy Association, and the Advancing Excellence Campaign in America's Nursing Home has made the reduction of physical restraints one of their major goals. Essentially, there's very little difference between the MDS 2.0 and 3.0 items. The difference is in MDS 2.0, it indicates whether trunk restraint, limb restraint, or chair prevents rising was utilized daily during the 7 days prior to the assessment. However, for the proposed measure, it makes a clarification and eliminates a little bit of the confusion regarding whether it was used in bed or whether the restraint was also used in a chair or out of bed. So that's the additional categories. They were refined to designed to eliminate some confusion about the definition of a restraint and enhance coding accuracy. And essentially, the cap is during development testing with the MDS 3.0 from gold standard to gold standard nurses range from 0.86 to 0.93, and gold standard to facility nurses 0.66 to 0.87. And looking at the variability that still remains across for this measure, again, using 2.0 data and looking at July through September 2009, the national average for daily physical restraint use was 3.3%, with the range going from a minimum of 0.2% to a high of 6.7%.
Actually, I think I'm the primary on this.
Yep.
Okay, great. That's okay. It's late in the day. I think this is a fairly simple issue. So clearly, this is of high importance. It is responsive to a core public policy goal as expressed in OBRA 87 and the CMS regulations. Implementing OBRA, reducing restraints is a principle that is agreed to by almost all the stakeholders involved in this process. So it's clearly of high importance. In terms of, I'll just say what the numerator and denominator are for this. Numerator is all long-stay residents who are physically restrained daily during the 7 days prior to an annual, quarterly, significant change or significant correction MDS 3.0 assessment during the selected time window. The denominator is all long-term stay residents who have had an annual, quarterly, significant change or significant correction MDS 3.0 assessment during the selected quarter and haven't been excluded. A resident is excluded if the selected MDS 3.0 assessment was conducted within 14 days of admission or if there was missing data in relevant questions in the MDS. So those are the exclusions. The reliability appears to be very high for this. There were a couple studies that were referenced in the material. There was no discrepancy in the DAVE 2 study using MDS 2.0. And there was a national pilot test for the proposed MDS 3.0 measures that showed good reliability with little evidence of confusion. Okay, the validity, there wasn't a whole lot of data presented on the validity of the measure. So I don't know if you could speak to that just briefly.
Sure. The University of Colorado evaluated validity of the current measure and they did it in a couple different ways. First, they examined the expected positive influence of public reporting on the quality of care by assessing the degree to which, you know, the quality measure was triggered and whether it's been proved over time. They also, again, looked at convergent validity, where you examine how the quality measure compares and it correlates to the other quality measures. They also wanted to see whether the quality measure triggering rate was influenced by factors unrelated to the facility, such as seasonal variation in the triggering rates across, they looked at 13 quarters of data in 2006, and also looked at the amount of variance in the triggering rates explained by the state where the facility was located. So essentially, for public reporting, it seems that the measure is having some effect, and as evidenced by the decline in the triggering rate from 8% in the third quarter of 2003 to 3.5% in the second quarter of 2009. And in regards to the convergent validity, there are the correlations with other clinical measures a week, which might reflect more the limited clinical relationship to physical restraints to the other measures. There's little evidence of seasonal variation, and 19.6%, though, of the variance in the reported rate for this measure was explained by the state in which the facility existed. So there's definitely a difference between states. However, it also does allow a facility within that particular state to examine how they perform versus other facilities within the state.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So in terms of the usability, it seems like this is a highly usable measure. CMS is expecting nursing homes to utilize the measure as a tool to decrease the use of restraints, and the Advancing Excellence in America's Nursing Home campaign supports the measure, and real progress in reducing the use of restraints have been made since the measure has been used since 2002. So it seems highly usable. Feasibility seems to be quite easy as well, since it comes from MDS data 3.0, and there's very little difference between 2.0 and 3.0 with respect to this. So because of this, I gave it, I mean, there was a little, wasn't a whole lot of validity data to rely on, but I found that the items were completely met, and Ronald Schumacher is the secondary reviewer.
Yep, as the secondary reviewer, I would concur with all of that. I thought this one was also relatively straightforward. Really couldn't find a significant weakness in this one, so would recommend that we go forward with it.
Any comments or questions?
Yeah, I just had a comment in terms of how in the new MDS-3 physical restraints are defined. How is it categorized?
It's categorized by either you could have a trunk restraint, a limb restraint, or chair prevents rising. And it can be used while in a bed or out of bed and in a chair. So they refine the categories to clean up the definition a little bit and make it more understandable.
What was the rationale for the 7 days before the MDS? Why was the 7 day cutoff chosen?
That's basically a standard look back period. There are a couple of items or quality measures that use a little bit different. But a standard 7 day look back period is what is utilized in many of the quality measures, taking a look 7 days to see how often the restraint was used and is used with other measures.
I'm just going to ask to make sure I'm understanding this right, that in the 7 days, the restraints had to be used every day of the prior 7 days in order for it to trigger. So
yes.
Someone who's in restraints 5 out of the 7 previous days,
they're okay.
Okay. And what was the rationale for that decision?
I think that the focus was that it had to be something that happened daily, and then how would you be able to track, although I guess you could make differences in 1 to 2 days, 2 to 3 days, 4 to 5 days.
So is it because the MDS item only asks if it was done daily in the past 7 days, or?
Section P.
Used less than daily and used daily.
Can I actually, Karen and I were more or less on the same wavelength.
Mm-hmm.
My question has to do with a research finding that you put out there that I found interesting. You said since 92 we've seen that, measurement has had an impact. So when you looked at the data, you saw that the folks who are restrained every day for the past 7 days went down. Did they just move into the 6 or fewer day category? or did we find ways to get some people completely off restraints? And so that's, did you look at that? Mm-hmm. And is there any thought that, so that you don't squeeze the balloon from here to here, is there any thought about looking at all three buckets?
That's a good question. And no, not to, you know, not to my understanding, did we look at the, other than daily, to sort of stratify and look at, yeah. But that is something we could definitely consider.
Yeah, Mary Jo.
You know, when we've been working, as you know, with Advancing Excellence on reducing restraints and really have mm-hmm. gotten the national rate down quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And at this point, CMS, I think, is sort of thinking, you know, should we be on to bigger and better things? And, you know, we've gotten them really down pretty far. But it does raise the question, I think Bruce raised it, which is maybe now's the time to really change the criteria and be, you know, and say, you know, not more than 2 or 3 days or something like that, mm-hmm. Or whatever the, I don't know the exact buckets for the MDS, but, you know, maybe this is an opportunity to take the next step.
And push it further.
I'd like to see us look at the reduction in alarms. Reduction in alarms.
Yeah, reduction in alarms or alarms going off.
Yeah, I'd like CMS to actually define alarms as a restraint.
I had just a question in terms of adjustment. You know, restraints are used for a reason, and I think most common reason being delirium and confusion and agitation, which sometimes is hard. And we haven't reached a point where, other than a person sitting with the patient, we can make the person safe in terms of falls and things like that. So I wonder if some adjustment is needed, raising the same question 7 days, you know, every day, few days, to sort of factor in as what is acceptable and what is not, you know, in terms of adjustment for the behaviors and other difficult agitation or delirium. I mean, once we know once delirium starts, it's 30 days. The person will need some kind of help. Mm-hmm. I mean, it may not be physical restraint, but maybe some alternative ways, other than alarms, of course, of helping the person.
Well, doesn't that raise another question about when you talk about where did the people go who were using the restraints? Are we shifting as an unintended consequence to chemical restraints as opposed to physical restraints?
My question is, why also the 14-day exclusion?
The 14-day exclusion?
Yeah. The 14-day, I mean, why? This is restraints for any period. Why? I mean, the literature is pretty clear on the harm restraints cause overall and the fact that they induce delirium when used early. And mm-hmm. where I'm not sure why this isn't just a flat-out measure straight across the board.
Let's just take a look at that. Well, this is, okay, if the assessment indicating is an over-admission conducted.
I guess I'm questioning why make this a long-stay measure? Why isn't this just any nursing home stay? And frankly, the hospitals would benefit from doing what the nursing homes do mm-hmm. out there.
Well, yeah, there was some concern during the TEP about, again, a patient coming straight from an acute care facility. And when in doubt, you know, if the patient had been restrained, until you assess the patient and figure out maybe what's an underlying condition might be, that, you know, maybe a med reduction or meds given could help the patient, or a change in their going from an acute care facility to a nursing facility, just sort of acclimation might make a difference. So they didn't want to focus on the short stay population, but I can certainly take your point.
So I'm hearing approve the measure actually as is, but the consensus of the group is that they'd like to see this measure, other measures go further and expand to why the short term, why not go beyond daily, add noise alarms as a form of restraint, and you almost need to complement this with medication as a restraint. Mm-hmm. But as is structured, I think it would be approval as is with no conditions, other than we would really, I think, strongly word something for CMS to do more than just this. Mm-hmm. Give RTI some more money to do some more measures. It's my taxpayer dollars, damn it.
David, this one also has a exclusion for missing information. And I just want to see if that's a concern for this measure as well that was brought up.
It's the issue that we've talked about where mm-hmm. if you leave any of the key things blank, they throw it out instead of assuming against you. So it's an incentive to leave it blank.
So would you like to amend the motion that we actually include those as counting, count them in the denominator, not in the numerator?
As we have with the last, with the caveat that unless there's some compelling research argument to go otherwise, excluded data should mean that we assume that they were restrained, not that they weren't. Mm-hmm.
Approved with that condition. And then the other recommendation we had. Okay.
Sure. Thank you.
All in favor? Any opposed? Abstaining? Wonderful. All right. We are through our schedule to public comment and NQF member comment. Sandy? You don't have to say anything if you don't want to, Sandy.
I am, and maybe this is something that you already have, but it's just a few comments on the pressure ulcer measure, and that's because there wasn't much discussion on it, and I don't have access to the information that you have, so you already have it, might have it in your information.
We don't have access to the information we have either, so.
Well, the issue is there's been a... It was identified that there's a lot of new things to pressure ulcer assessment in MDS-3, but one of the things I did not hear mentioned was we, for the first time, will be looking at ways to code DTIs and unstageable ulcers. So given that, when it comes to the short-stay ulcer, the short-stay measure, if that individual has an unstageable and we recognize it on admission, and then you're looking at the measure, the assessment on discharge, and by that time we can code it, is that being considered a new measure or is this an exclusion? So that's number one. And then secondly, on that short stay, where we're looking at the admission assessment and then the discharge, currently, the average length of stay is 29 days. Some of those folks will be discharged much sooner than that. We have a short period, and we may not always see healing in an ulcer in some of those individuals. So I can see that that would be problematic, too.
I'm Toby Edelman with the Center for Medicare Advocacy. I'd like to make a few brief comments. First, I've been somewhat troubled by what I've heard today. It seems to me that a very significant portion of the steering committee represents the nursing home industry, and there's very limited representation of consumer or beneficiary interests. I think that's an inappropriate balance on this committee. And the result, I think, is that a lot of the discussion, or a significant amount of discussion today, has been how facilities will look when a measure is publicly reported. Heard a lot of discussion about not wanting facilities to be dinged. God forbid they looked worse than they should. Not a lot of discussion about whether the measure would be useful to nursing homes for quality improvement purposes, and certainly not discussion about whether consumers really want to hear about this information if it's useful to them. I know from working with residents and their families and advocates for residents that what people really care about is staffing. The literature we know indicates that the most important predictor of high quality of care is the staff, the nursing staff in the nursing home, particularly registered nurses, but also the paraprofessional staff. And consumers understand that, and yet the committee voted down the two measures that were considered for staffing. At least we're going to get that from Congress. Who would have thought it's easier to get something like that through Congress than through a committee? My final point is I was on the TEP, and I think we had a very significant amount of enthusiasm for the chemical restraint issue that a couple of people raised just now here at the end. We know that there's an enormous amount of antipsychotic drug use in nursing homes. The MDS for the fourth quarter 2009 indicated like 26% of residents are receiving antipsychotic drugs. The general number is like 25 to 30% of residents get antipsychotic drugs. As many as half don't have a diagnosis that would justify the use of the drug. So there's a lot of off-label use. Since 2005, the Food and Drug Administration has had black box warnings, first for the atypical antipsychotics, then for the conventional antipsychotics, talking about an increase in morbidity for residents with dementia. There was testimony by the Food and Drug Administration in Congress in 2007 that approximately 15,000 residents are dying from the inappropriate use of antipsychotic drugs. RTEP was interested in this, and maybe RTI could get more money to look into this because I think it's a very important issue. I think people understand that physical restraints are a problem, but the chemical restraints, I think, are really replacing the physical, and it's killing a lot of people. Thank you.
Isis Montalvo from the American Nurses Association. I just want to reiterate, I think, some of the key points that were made earlier in that when we think about patients across settings, patients moving from the acute care setting to the long-term care setting, and we're looking at measures that are going to evaluate the care across settings, that it would really benefit us as providers, as consumers, to have those measures harmonized. And so that way you can follow that patient from the acute care setting to the long-term care setting, regardless of whether it's a fall, whether it's a pressure ulcer, regardless of staffing, certainly accommodating what needs to be accommodated for that specific setting, but realizing the value in being able to measure that care across settings.
So CMS, can you put the MDS into the hospital setting? It would be helpful. Any other comments? We're ahead of schedule, and so I'm going to take a quick moment.
I don't want to throw a monkey wrench in, but did we do four?
Did I miss something?
I think what happened...
Did we do 004-10?
I think we did the five.
Oh, fall rate. You're right. We didn't do fall rate. I apologize.
Yes, we did.
Oh, we did. Yes, we did. That's right. We did do it. Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Alice did it. That's right. Yep. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. So I guess the way the evening is we're going. You guys are taking us to dinner somewhere, right?
Yes.
So there's a shuttle outside at 6 o'clock. To take us to dinner. Those who are staying in the hotel at the Sheraton can't get back to the hotel unless you come to dinner with us. So those who are not staying at the hotel and drove here, I guess you don't have to come to dinner with us if you don't want. But they're welcome to come, right?
Yes.
Okay. I want to take a quick moment. We have time on the agenda tomorrow at lunch, but I know some of you will probably be bolting out of here. I just want to take a moment just to go around the room, and each of you can just sort of mention, we are talking about functional measures tomorrow, so I don't want to get into tomorrow's measures, and we can talk about it afterwards, but particularly in some of the areas that we looked at today, which were pain, pressure ulcers, prevention, staffing, and mental health area, and other areas, just to comment on some areas that you would like to see some measures develop, because we are constrained by what actually gets submitted by the vendors out there and also constrained by what they've actually decided to do. And as I said, we're not a measurement group, but we do get an opportunity to at least give some guidance to where we'd like to see some additional measures. And so just I'd like to go around the room, and since we only have 20 minutes and there's 20 of us, you got to keep your comments pretty short, and we'll have time to talk about it a bit tomorrow. But Mary Rose?
I think psychotropic medication would be an excellent measure to look at, and I think that impacts probably, that would be a domino effect on most of the measures we talked about today, and we see negative outcome from the extended use of that. So I would be an opponent of that. I also think another measure I would like to see, well, it's on tomorrow with the ADLs and things, but that would be my primary measure. Thank you.
I would say the CAPS measures.
I think I would echo that comment, and I can remember about CAPS or at least about satisfaction or experience of care and so forth. From the first time serving on the first steering committee, it was identified then, and it's been an absolute frustration to me to see what the experience has been since then, because I saw the development of nursing home CAPS. Had conversation with ARC and whatnot about that. They developed the tool to put it up in the public domain for everybody to ignore. And yet at the same time, you have hospital CAPS, home health CAPS, and home health CAPS did go through the NQF process and so forth. And the only thing I ever really wanted or hoped that CMS would do is to do with CAPS or with satisfaction or experiences of care, what they've done with MDS, which is just define the specs and let existing vendors embed it within their processes.
I'd like to echo the CAPS idea, but I'd like to add a couple of nuances to it. First of all, given how many patients, residents there are with dementia, I would like to see someone do some research on surrogate reporting, whether it's the professional or the family caregiver. And I'd also like to ask, you consider looking at end-stage dementia as a possible life-limiting illness with the possibility that that might lead to more palliative care and less aggressive care. There's been some recent literature about that that has to do with, I think, appropriateness of care, waste, and a lot of related kinds of things. So end-stage dementia, can we consider it life-limiting illness? In that case, is hospice and palliative care more appropriate than life-prolonging care or aggressive kinds of treatments?
And I would agree with everything that's been stated and add a couple. One, beyond just psychotropic meds, but looking at management of polypharmacy as a whole. And additionally, looking back to the fall issue, looking at identification of fall risk factors and care planning to address individualized risk factors.
I know we're talking about it tomorrow, but incontinence, there's so much prevalence in nursing homes, so that's important. I would also like to see something about person-directed or surrogate-directed care.
And along those, you know, the same lines as patient satisfaction, I would like to see something about texture-modified diets, including the use of thickened liquids. They lead to dehydration. Most of the time, none of us in this room would drink them either, but yet we expect our residents to do it, and it's a quality of life issue. And many physicians will not change the order because they're concerned about lawsuits and litigation and all of that, and yet our residents are suffering terribly because, you know, they're cupping their hands, they're doing all kinds of behaviors, you know, and then what do we do when they do behaviors and we put them on meds? So, I mean, it's just a vicious circle. So I'd like to see something about dysphagia, swallowing.
Meds that are anticholinergic can dry out their mouth, so they need to drink more.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
I'm still worried about the staffing issue. I'm sorry we were not able to get a measure that was workable, but I think that we need to somehow figure out how to appropriately and accurately measure staffing, given that there is diversity in how staff are allocated at various nursing homes. It's a difficult issue, but I don't think it's one that's going to go away.
Yeah, I think I agree with some of the measures sort of mentioned before, which will make a difference. My interest would be to see something on delirium. I think the problem is prevention is important and management is important, but we don't understand the mechanism of delirium, and that's why we can't have concrete interventions or management approaches to it. But that ties in with what the polypharmacy and dementia and falls. So I think it's a major area which needs to be studied in nursing home, because that's where the future studies will be done. The time for studying delirium in hospitals is over, or at least it will, in terms of understanding the life history of delirium, I think the future studies of delirium will be in nursing homes. And some approaches should be made as quality indicators in this area.
I also want to talk about antipsychotic drugs in the long-term care setting. If it's okay, I hope you don't mind the intrusion, but I'm going to email a white paper to everyone on this committee tonight. And tomorrow I'll bring basically one-page kind of talking points that summarizes some of the data. So I'll bring that in tomorrow, but I share that concern.
We touched on person-centered care, but we really have done nothing around culture change. And it's really too bad. I think that one of the things that's inhibited the field is that we haven't had metrics, but we're starting to get metrics, and now we need to get them tested. One of the things that we've done, I think, in advancing excellence that speaks to person-centeredness as we're looking at the issue of consistent assignment, because we know from focus groups with residents that the thing they value the most highly are relationships with their nurses' aides. So figuring out ways to measure this, and I think we finally have a way to objectively measure it from the resident's perspective. We also have started to try to collect some data about including residents in setting goals for their care and participating in care planning. Questions about how do you give life meaning in a nursing home? I mean, we're very focused on you can get up anytime you want, but if there's nothing to get up for, what are we doing? So, you know, I think that there are things that we should be starting to look for metrics, and we may have to be pretty creative about it, and then start to test them if we're really going to start to measure quality in nursing homes beyond just physical care.
I absolutely ditto what Mary Jane is saying. I think it's such an important issue for us to tackle and not an easy one whatsoever. In terms of looking at quality of life and truly looking at how we're able to really fulfill lifestyle preference and choice. I also like the idea of CAPS. I think there's a lot of quagmires that they're experiencing in other settings that we can learn from, but I think it's a real important piece as well. And again, on my hill to die on are the alarms. I do think it is just really is a restraint in a horrific way. We've seen a really great studies going on with decreasing alarms without any increase in falls. So I'll make that a plug for the alarms.
Well, infection control and prevention is where I'm at. So I would like to see more done with the, especially communication between healthcare facilities about multi-drug resistant organisms and the residents, the ping pong back and forth between the hospital and the nursing home, and also more judicious use of antibiotics, because we all know that the multi-drug resistant organisms are just continuing to appear and appear. And we have to look at how we treat our residents in the nursing home.
I'll use this one. So I would echo the thoughts about polypharmacy and antipsychotic use. I'll throw out a couple others. One that people kind of touched on, advanced care planning. is there a way that we can, you know, measure at least attempts to have discussions around advanced care planning with residents? And then the last one would be inappropriate hospital admissions. I think that's something we need to look closely at.
Yeah, I think it was Chuck Darby, the late Chuck Darby's dream to have a unified way of measuring patient experiences of care, and CAHPS was it. So I'm glad you brought that up. By the way, in the process of getting that passed, there was a sort of political deal to drop all the coordination of care questions, which are the only ones that actually have a tie to clinical outcomes. So I'd love to see that go back in. And there may be things that we measure on a CAHPS for this population that aren't relevant in the hospital, sort of a well-being scale, a usefulness scale, or something, a happiness scale. I don't know. I love the idea of you know, the infection control people said it. The reason MRSA is not going down is because we're trying to fix it the same way we fix heart attacks, which is one hospital, one unit at a time, when in fact infection control is no stronger in any community than the weakest link. And our data is real clear on that. So MRSA would be something I would go after, but I would go after it not only in a harmonized way, but actually in a coordinated way with one set of measures over different settings, which is more than harmonization. And then on polypharmacy, I kind of like how it intersects with the chemical restraints. And there's one other factor that that folks developing a measure could consider, which is the P450 pathway overwhelming that. I actually think it would be a sort of a risk adjuster as to how many is too many that would be easy to deal with. Certain drugs need that. We talked about advanced directives, and I think I'm there.
I keep crossing things off my list here, but I think one that would be nice to look at is return to community and transition planning.
As a surgical specialist, I have a couple of thoughts on how our care interacts with people in nursing home care. And so I would support things related to nutrition, not just weight loss, but nutrition, because it impacts wound healing and a number of other things, certainly polypharmacy and delirium. I think the issue about advanced directives is critical in terms of, as Naomi said, you know, utilization of care and resources, especially at end of life and things like that. And then another area, and Lisa may have some comments on this, but one of the things I don't think we've touched on are sort of the legal and financial aspects of care and how that influences families, family caregivers. I mean, I know from my own practice in nursing homes, I've seen couples have to divorce and things in order to reach spend downs and things, and how those kind of outcomes, which I think are going to be hard to capture, but how that impacts families, you know, in their interactions, their spiritual needs, those types of things.
I'm just going to amplify two. One has to do with measures related to culture change and so ways to measure organizational practices that promote person-directed care. And then the other one I want to amplify is the nurse staffing measure or measures, particularly a measure of or measures of turnover and stability, and also specifically turnover and stability of the director of nursing and the administrator.
I'd like to see more non-MDS measures. I think we've let the tail wag the dog long enough. And so I'll reamplify quality of life is the, you know, we focus on the clinical. We need to do quality of life. So whether it's CAHPS, whether it's culture change, structural measures, you know, if you give me a medication at 4 in the morning and stick a needle in me to draw blood at 5 in the morning, I'm gonna SWAT you and then be restrained and put on chemicals. And so, but I also think things like you know, flexibility in when people eat, when they bathe, noising in there. It is at the infancy. I thank the Commonwealth for funding the type of work. If you can fund more of it to get measures out there, Mary Jane, it'd be great. But I think we need to move that direction. The other would be rehospitalization. The ping-ponging of the hospitalization rate is just staggering, if not just for the cost control. We know that the hospitals are dangerous for our patients when they go there, if we can keep them out of the hospital. And a lot of it goes to the end-of-life discussion, so it's not just the PDA. So if we can really look at rehospitalization rates, it's just, you know, the fact that one out of four go back within 14 days is just such a bad sign of their healthcare system. So,
Gift, just one thing that you stimulated a thought, as did the other lady who talked about transitions. You know, there is an NQF transitional care measure, the CTM3. There is no reason that could not be used for the discharges of the post-acute care patients, residents. You know, because at least then you'd see whether or not there was some value in the post-acute care, mm-hmm. and whether or not once they got into the community, they stayed there.
Yeah, excellent point. And then I just want to reiterate that staffing, I too am sad that we couldn't get something staffing. But to me, I'm more interested in, I think the greater impact is not necessarily the staffing levels and everything else, there's good data on it, it's consistent assignment and turnover. If we can get those, that would be very valuable.
That was a spectacular list. Obviously, lots more work to do. I did want to. I think the idea of the CTM3 is. I think the idea of the CTM3 is a great idea, and we'll try to make sure we bring those specs for you to take a look at tomorrow. Because that would be a relatively easy one for us to go to Eric Coleman, have him look at it, who's a geriatrician as well. I don't think he'd mind, to see whether it's easily applicable, and it wouldn't require any other work other than the fact that it's already endorsed and use in multiple states as well.
We're actually piloting its use in home care. As for discharge from home health care into the community. And I was talking to Alice Bonner, who is in Massachusetts with the Department of Health, and they're willing to test it in a couple nursing homes.
Yeah, I would just go back to the beginning comments. We're not, while a lot of work in CMS does a lot of really shapes the direction, NQF endorsed measures can be and will be used by many groups outside of CMS, and so it doesn't have to be MDS-based. You know, there are states that are hungry to try to do some of that. CMS wants to make a comment.
Hi, I'm Sharon.
You are CMS,
Ling.
Yes.
I'm intimidated. Just thank you so much for your comments and suggestions. They're extraordinarily helpful. We have an open ear and collective open mind. I think it's important for you to know that we're just getting started. These measures that you have been presented today are from the MDS 3.0. There are other measures still that could be built from the MDS 3.0, taking full advantage of the enhancements of the instrument. But we are also interested in facilitating the development of measures that are not necessarily originating in the MDS 3.0. So speaking to the intent of taking a system-wide approach, coordination of care, the transfer of information and of that care, I think those are important concepts that they're on our radar screen. The concepts of, you know, healthcare-associated infections and how to look at things from a system point of view, not just within facilities or a setting. That, too, is on our radar screen. So I'm very encouraged by your comments and suggestions. I really sincerely thank you.
Certainly, based on the comments of the steering committee, we will try one more time to go back to ARC and CMS on the CAPS issue, because we really were hoping to have it submitted to this project.
So a couple housekeeping. I lied before. The magic bus is not out there at 6 o'clock. It's out there at 6:20. So you have 20 minutes to do whatever. What's at the restaurant? What is the address of the restaurant? I don't know. The restaurant.
The shuttle's leaving at 6:20 is what I believe the schedule says. It's Clyde's restaurant in Chevy Chase.
And there is a change for tomorrow. The shuttle is, despite what was the confusing stuff slid under our doors at the staying at the Sheraton. We were trying to keep you from coming. That's why. And despite the different agendas we've got, the shuttle is leaving at 8:10 tomorrow, so be down. Right?
That's what my schedule says.
8:10 tomorrow from the Sheraton, so be down by 8:05, or we'll leave you out. And the meeting starts at 8:45.
With a working breakfast.
We'll start at 8:45, not 8:46 or 8:47, at 8:45.
So we can eat here?
Yes.
Tomorrow morning. Yeah.